Welcome to the Gary Gallaher Law Hour. Attorney Gary Gallaher and his firm have represented thousands of Hawaii workers and families during more than 35 years' practice throughout the islands. Whether helping countless workers exposed to asbestos unknowingly in their jobs, filing suit against gas companies for unfair local pricing, or representing the state of Hawaii and winning a settlement against Big Tobacco, the Gallaher Law Firm helps fight for consumer advocacy and fair play for the people of Hawaii. No kopono on your behalf. Now, Gary and his team are here to take the mystery out of what they do and answer your legal questions. So here's the host of our show, Mike Buck, and Hawaii attorney Gary Gallaher.
Once again, welcome to our program. We're just so pleased that you've decided to sit down and sit a spell with us and talk story. You know, one of the things that I really enjoy, Gary Gallaher and I we've known each other for a long time, and it's only just recently that I realized how many things he does and how many things he's involved in, just besides these high-profile cases that you just heard about. So with that, and before we start telling you what our topic for today is, we're looking at the weather condition that is going to bring, you know, some concerns, specifically for those of you that are on a neighbor island like Molokai, where you spend a lot of your time. What do you do in the case of a weather situation? Just hunker down? What do you do?
That's exactly what we do. We just like everybody else, we hope for the best.
That being said, we hope for the best today. And one of the things that you and I started talking about last week is something that you're very, very passionate about, and that is our young people avoiding the pitfalls of sports-related injuries, particularly about football. You've opened my eyes a lot. Before we even talk about what we're going to do today, what piqued your interest? I know you know a lot about the late John Wilbur and the stresses that he went through and all that thing. But, you know, of all the things that you could be passionate about and get on a pony about, why this? Why this area?
It affects so many people, as you pointed out, Mike. John Wilbur, NFL player, and he passed away with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is a change of the brain that causes all kinds of horrible things. Junior Seau have it, and several others. And once you see how devastating this is, it basically accelerates the aging process. Your long-term neurocognitive health goes to hell in a handbasket, if you will, because of the repeated over and over hits to the head. Well, unlike you would think that the helmet would protect you, the helmet does anything but. It's the helmet that causes the problem.
Doesn't that sort of weaponize our energy?
it weaponizes the brain.
Me. Yeah.
Well, what it really does is, if you can imagine the kids, young kids especially, playing game, and if they had the brain on the outside of their helmet, that's what's really going on. Mm-hmm. The brain is like a material, like cottage cheese, and if you can imagine putting it inside a rubber ball and kick it around, that's what's going on. So rather than just deal with the aftermath and the devastating effects of high school and college players, which we're looking at evaluating now because they have traumatic brain injury, and we're looking at those cases when they can no longer perform in school or professional school at their level, and we trace it back, and it's because they played football. And the helmet that was supposed to protect them was horribly defective. Well, what really got me going on this was because I had been a special ed teacher and had seen firsthand what a diminution of cognitive ability or losing IQ points really means. You can only take so many away and you're not human anymore. It's really tragic. There was a wonderful or a revealing series written in the New York Times about a year and a half ago about a hockey enforcer named Bogart, and it was tragic, and I could never get that out of my mind. And then once we got involved in the NFL case and the concussions that were going on there, I went to a mainland seminar on traumatic brain injury, and we brought some of that expertise here in Hawaii. But Hawaii, thanks to the Hawaii Concussion Awareness Program, a management program, was way ahead of the curve.
Mm. Yeah, you know, it's sort of interesting because if those that have been with us in the program from the beginning have learned that, you know, the expertise that you developed in some other parts of your practice, taking those skills to the mainland, we expect usually to be spoon-fed from, well, in Minnesota, this is what they found out. In actual fact, because of our, I don't know, year-round sports plan or activities or Ohana or whatever, the information flow is going in the other direction for a change.
Oh, but it's actually a two-way street here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had Nathan Murata before, who's a PhD and up at the University of Hawaii as a department head of the University of Hawaii Kinesiology and Rehabilitation Sciences on the program before. We also have Ross Oshiro with us, who is H-Camp director, but he works at Queens Medical Center, and he works training coaches and trainers throughout the state on how to avoid these problems mm-hmm. rather than deal with after-the-fact tragedy of traumatic brain injury, but how to avoid these.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where we're going today, and that's why it's exciting because, you know, you can talk about things, you can read reports, but it's really, really cool to talk to the guys that in the military, they say boots on the ground. In other words, what is the job once all of this has been recognized as being something that we should all be concerned about? What's the fix, and how do we go about it? That's why maybe we should meet Ross Oshiro. He's got more alphabet soup at the end of his name than most of us, and joins us here live today. Ross, first of all, thank you very much for carving out some time and coming down and spending some time with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
What's your background? Where do you get into the sports medicine area? What piqued your interest and when?
I'm actually an athletic trainer. Mm-hmm. I've been an athletic trainer almost 30 years, coming from the high schools. I was the coordinator for the Department of Education Athletic Training Program. And that's where this program basically got started is probably about 2007 when we started looking at this a little more seriously mm-hmm. and how we in Hawaii deal with concussions. And we tried to reach out to people on the mainland and develop a program that we can utilize here.
Sort of interesting, Gary Gallagher, because, you know, we do get involved in things 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, especially outside. And even though kids aren't allowed to play football all year round, they do other things all year round. So I'm just wondering if maybe this is a great meeting of the minds and getting together with regards to coming up with the structure so that you can determine where you are and where you need to go.
Well, I think it's, no, we look at it from the catastrophic effects that we're dealing with clients and football players in the past that depended on helmets that really didn't protect them. And then coming to work with Nathan and Ross and Troy to prevent these catastrophic injuries going forward and how we can save sports, how we can harness all that incredible energy that and life's pursuit of coaches and trainers, mm-hmm. but just how to make it safer, but still exciting, but just safer.
Yeah, that's the other day when we're talking about this, Ross, and this is maybe where I come into the picture because I played a lot of football too. You've been in it long enough to know, you know, decades, that there have been tremendous what they call improvements in the equipment. And yet we're hurting each other. So in other words, when Gary was talking about the helmet a while ago, I was only a few steps away, as he was back in the day, from a leather helmet with one bar in the front to protect your teeth. Now these helmets are really expensive and they're really fancy, and yet our kids are still getting hurt. What's up with that?
Well, the helmets have gotten a lot better. They're a lot lighter than they were before, mm-hmm. so they feel more comfortable, so they don't. You don't feel the hits as you did before with a leather helmet or just a suspension-type helmet. There's a lot more padding in them, so it kind of gives you a false sense of security that you can hit somebody with your head not get hurt. And that's probably the biggest change. If we're moving toward prevention, that's probably where it's going to be changing and how people learn to tackle on how do you take the head out of the game.
Yeah, because we talked about this a little bit, and actually, most of us that were in that part of the game were taught to hit people as hard as you can, as often as you can, and make them feel sorry that they're facing you across the other side of the line. And it's hard to change that philosophy, that mentality.
Right. And it is changing the culture of the game, changing the culture of sports and how we as athletic trainers, coaches, parents perceive all of this. And it's not just getting excited over a big hit mm-hmm. Using your head. But you can still make a big hit and not use your head. And there are different organizations out there that are trying to teach that to the young kids with the Pop Warner. And with Seattle Seahawks, they have what they call hawk tackling.
Hawk tackling.
Hawk tackling.
Yeah, we're going to learn about that. It's sort of interesting, though, Gary Gallagher, that a lot of times you represent clients because of equipment, whether they be you know, a high chair or a seat belt or all of the kind of things that you've done. Here's a part of the football game that they keep telling you how improved they've gotten. And that must be, they've improved to the point where you can get hurt worse.
Well, yes and no. When we're talking cutting edge, what we're talking about right here as far as Ross and what he just mentioned and the Hawk tackle and working with Ross and his group at H-Camp, we're finding out what's going on around the country. For instance, at the University of New Hampshire, they're actually practicing there without helmets all week except for the game. Okay. We're predicting there's going to be a precipitous drop in the number of concussions there. So it's this emerging data we want that the NFL has just fought forever to keep secret. Mm-hmm. Like they won't use smart helmets that we desperately need that data for, that generate the data on the spot. They're like little Richter scales that follow the brain around what kind of hits, and we can make it safer, but they're retarding. They're keeping everything as slow as they can for their business model.
You know, Ross, that's got to be to guys in your profession, like, thank goodness, here it comes. But why is it taking so long, and why isn't it being implemented? You mentioned something I think is key, and that is the audience and the players and the coaches and the trainers have to learn to appreciate different aspects of the game rather than the knockout blow.
Correct, yeah. It's that excitement that everybody wants to see, and that's what football has always been about.
Yeah, scoring a touchdown, you know, like running and catching the ball, right?
Yeah. And making that big hit as a defensive back, making a big hit. Mm-hmm. I think that part of it is going to take a little bit longer for people to understand that you still can enjoy the game, you can still have big hits, but you just take the hit out of the game and you make the game safer for all the kids.
How do you look at taking the results of all this study and all of this get-togethers and getting back down into the coaches and the other trainers and making them, they have to do a paradigm shift in their thinking too.
Correct. And it just takes time. We've been doing this since 2010, and it's still a slow process. And it's going to be a slow process to make that change in that coaching style of how you take that mentality of suck it up and keep playing and making the change of take care of your athletes. They're important for the safety of themselves as well as for the success of your team.
Yeah, but Gary Galler, you look at things, I think, just at a little different end, saying, well, what are we waiting for? I mean, if we know these things are good, how many more injuries or how many things can we get out there right now to prevent a kid from getting hurt? So how do you contain your anxiety, or not your anxiety, but your anxiousness to get rolling on this?
It's just the importance and the magnitude of it. I want it to be embraced and naturally embraced by just full disclosure and education. And Ross and his group are cutting edge nationally. The people in Boston that are doing actual research and pathology on the brains marvel at our sense of community here and how H-Camp and Ross and his group have taken such a leadership role. They'd give anything if that would be going on nationally. Mm-hmm. So it's all relative, and it's like most things, Mike. It's not an easy answer. It's a complex answer. But rather than just give up, and some people say, oh, the NFL's never going to change, I disagree. When parents, when coaches, when responsible trainers and physicians know exactly what's going on, we're going to protect our kids. Mm-hmm. We're going to move them around this threat and still save the game.
You know, that must be interesting at how you set priorities. I want to be a fly on the wall here. And typically when you guys get together, everybody's got busy schedules, but everybody carves out time for this issue because of its level of importance. What goes on? You know, what do you guys talk about? And besides, you want some sign in with this, or do we want to get right down to business?
Kind of a combination of all those things. Myself, I'd like to just put a little context to this in that, you know, Ross is not just some guy off the street. Ross is huge in this, so I want our listeners to know a little bit about Ross. Mm-hmm. Ross, why don't we start? What is your background? Where did you go to school, and how did you get into this training business?
I'm a graduate of St. Louis High School.
Go Crusaders.
Yeah.
But not against Pono, but go every other time.
No comment with
that. See, he stopped right in his tracks. Hey, Gary, I don't think you've probably heard him stop talking ever, right? He just stopped in his tracks like a deer.
No. He knows Walter Kiermitsu and Jimmy Burns and you know, all my friends over there, Ray Tam. Those are good people. Good people you came from.
Okay,
where you started. Let's get back to your, how'd you get into the training business?
I got into athletic training when I went to school in New Mexico. And that's where I got my education in it. I started working in the high schools in New Mexico. And I moved back to Hawaii, and then I worked at several different other schools, Kamehameha, St. Louis, Roosevelt, and then at the state level in the Department of Education. And the way we treat concussions back then is night and day than the way that we treat concussions today.
Sure.
And
can you give us a couple examples of that? I mean, back in the day, if you suspected that I just got a concussion, what did you do?
If you had any signs and symptoms and it went away in 15 minutes, mm-hmm. you could go back in the game.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a lot different. Today, you have any sign and symptom, we're pulling you out, you're sitting out the rest of the game, mm-hmm. and then we're reevaluating you the next day and see how you're doing.
Gary, we took a look at that last time, and there is a really organized step-by-step procedure. That kid's not going back on the field until these things have been checked off.
Oh, it's getting better all the time and every year, and it's a constant upgrade of new data and new information. As we sat down here before we started, Ross mentioned that he got a new package from the CDC. So we're getting upgraded research all the time. But getting back to Ross and how you got started in this and tying it a little more directly, there's an extremely well-known and renowned athletic director that's retired. Neil Takamori, do you know him?
Yeah, I've known Neil for quite a while.
And we were at McKinley the other night, and you guys put on a fabulous presentation there. And I drank lots of water, so I had to use the Lua several times. And so going back there up along, I've seen everybody from Duke Hanamoku, all the famous graduates to the original high school we had in the state. But Neil over there has gotten his recognition, but I understand from meeting and talking to Neil, he was instrumental in getting the focus put on trainers and high-risk groups, schools get more than one trainer. Can you give us a little of history? And if you were involved with Neil on that, how did that unfold?
Yeah, Neil and Dwight Toyama, they're the two athletic directors that pushed for the state to get athletic trainers in the high schools. And it started back in 1993 when the first athletic trainers came into the state. We started with 10 athletic trainers. And then we moved to having two athletic trainers in, I think, 2004 or 2005. So today we have, in the Department of Education, we have close to 75 athletic trainers. So almost every school has two athletic trainers. So it's for the kids to protect them, keep them safe, work on their rehabilitation, keep them in the game, basically.
Would it almost matter, excuse me, but I just love this, hearing about this, because I really honestly was not aware of it. You know, everybody knows that there's coaches, assistant coaches, line coaches, basketball coaches, every other kind of coach, but the word trainer wasn't around. Yeah. In this day and age, when dollars are tight and tough to come by, somebody must have thought back and said, hey, wait a minute, this is something that's a must-have.
Yeah, definitely, and that's where Neil and Dwight came in, and they went to the legislatures, and they asked for them to put this into the budget, and Calvin Say was a big supporter of this project, and he still is to today, as well as his friends to help get us all these positions. Well, we are probably the only state in the nation that has athletic trainers in all of their public high schools.
See, mark down another one for us, Gary. You're right.
No, it is. Yeah, it's great. Every day I find out something new. The more I work with these guys and my staff or other lawyers in my office help me understand, I'm amazed. But it's interesting because we do have such a sense of community here in Hawaii, and the athletic community. When you go around with somebody like Eddie Chung, I used to teach special ed with him. He taught special ed long after me. We go around, and it's such a small community. You bump into people all the time, and that's the real thing, a real important thing in Hawaii. And then not to mention the sense of commitment in the profession. Whether it's Neil Takamori, to this day, he's retired. He's been, now he babysits. But his passion is sports. He dropped everything to have breakfast with us and help us get pointed in the right direction, because we're 100% supporters of the effort going forward. But Ross, in particular, was in fine form last week at McKinley, and we put on a really polished presentation with medical evidence, the current research, and what's going on and why. So could you just outline for us what you did last week at McKinley and what the strategy is and what the thinking is and how you're going around statewide to give anything if all trainers and parents and everyone listening could have been there? It was so good.
Yeah, so we started this again in 2010, and the idea is not just to hit one target group. We basically have to hit everybody involved, and it's everybody in the athletic community. That includes the coaches, the athletic trainers, the parents, the school administrator, the faculty, the medical doctors. So everybody's involved with how we care for an injured athlete, and we created a DVD that most of the DOE schools use, and it provides some data of the number of concussions that we had previous to the start and the number of concussions that we currently have, and then kind of gives an idea of which sports have the most concussions, which sports have the most high risk of having a concussion. And in Hawaii, it's girls' judo that has the highest risk of injury for a concussion. And Hawaii is probably one of the few states that actually has.
I was going to say, how many states actually have girls' judo, right?
Yeah. I think we're the only one that actually is an interscholastic sport. Mm-hmm. And that's a sport that probably has the most concussions for the female athlete.
Are there physiological reasons? Is it the makeup of the skull? I mean, what causes gals to get hurt more often than boys in that sport?
I think part of it is because of their makeup. They have a smaller neck, so not as strong of a neck to support the head. Their core may not be as strong. They don't know how to fall, and that's probably the biggest thing in judo. Judo is such a technical sport on how to fall, how to tumble, and a lot of our girls start the sport late, so they start when they're in high school instead of starting off when they're a 5-6-year-old, with a lot of the judo kids do. So they participate in the sport because their friend goes out for the sport. So it's that friendship that they build up.
Yeah. But Gary, were you surprised at that? Because I'm frankly quite surprised at that.
Oh, no, that's why this research is so groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. It's only going on in Hawaii, and we've been funded. They've been funded for 5 years, so they're hopefully going to get more funding going forward. But it's excellent from the standpoint they revealed that about the Wahine judo, but the same pattern follows with Wahine volleyball, with Wahine basketball and wrestling, and it leads me to believe that it has to do with the actual brain cavity of a male versus female. But the key part going forward from my perspective is the more data we can generate. If we get accelerometers on these athletes and we videotape, we can figure out exactly what moves are good and whatnot and coach around those that we can go forward. So that's where I come at, my angle on this.
I'll bet you there are people out there listening to the program. And by the way, when you want to know more about this or any other program, you just go to GallagherLaw.com, G-A-L-I-H-E-R, GallagherLaw.com. I'm kind of wondering, in the very beginning, this is like, you know, a kid in the candy shop. They find out all of these really neat things in research. What about pushback and maybe resistance to change? Because I know me, if somebody all of a sudden said, hey, everything you're doing has got to be tweaked a little bit. How are coaches and parents and more importantly, how are athletes buying into some of this?
I think this is where it's coming from the national level, the National High School Federation for High Schools, our national body that governs all interscholastic sports. In 2010, they came out with a ruling, and they basically said any athlete that showed any sign and symptom of a concussion were to be removed from the game.
Wow. So male or female, no preference, right?
Any sport. Started with football, and they went to all the sports after that. So with that statement, it was a strong statement for interscholastic sports that we need to start paying attention to our athletes.
Gary's going to start getting calls from parents that say, hey, Gary, you're my lawyer. What's the best sport for my kid to get into? Because, I mean, it almost comes down to what's the safest sport?
Well, not really. It's individual decisions with parents, with children. I mean, here at H Camp, even their own kids, they have these discussions amongst themselves, and that's how it should be, a solid, honest basis about it. We don't want to take the passion away. We don't want to take the fun away. But by the same token, if there's ways the game can get changed subtly or practice, And with the research that Ross and Nathan and Troy have done, we keep continuing that, yet I want to up it to get more current. You know, why can't the NFL use smart helmets? Why can't that fund a smart helmet or the hit? It might cost $50,000 or $60,000 for a whole football game, football team, but we get that data. What kind of tackles are safe? What kind of angle can you hit from? And it'd be the same for every sport. And I am convinced with the right funding and focus on this, we can go forward. And within 5 years, we're going to make huge, huge strides in large measure from the work that's going on here in Hawaii.
On this case, Ross, do you feel that having that sort of attitude in the private sector, in the legal sector, is help? Because, obviously, if people weren't buying it, what I'm getting at is that, if a kid doesn't want to tell a coach that he's hurt because he doesn't want to get pulled out of the game, that in going forward would be the opposite. He'd want to say right away, coach, I might be hurt. You know, let's take a look at me because I want to be able to be better next week. I don't want to get hurt.
Right. So, that's where that whole cultural change has to come from. So the coach has to be the one to tell these athletes, you need to report when you have an injury. And then same thing with mom and dad. They need to tell the child that same thing. If you're going to go out for this sport, you need to be honest with us and tell us when you have an injury. And I think it starts there. And the more the kids buy into it, that's easier for the coach to coach.
Yeah, but what I'm thinking is because what you do with training is that once an injury has been, diagnosed, that there's a clear path to training to get back to, optimum, or in other words, to heal it. You don't go to a trainer before you get hurt, but maybe you should. Maybe you should go to the trainer and say, this is what I'm trying to accomplish. Help me.
Yeah, and that's part of the prevention side of it, the strength and conditioning side of it, and that's a big part of the preseason workout where they get the kids stronger, they get the kids' core stronger, the neck stronger, how to prepare the shoulders so that they can take the contact. And I think that's the big missing piece in a lot of the female sports is they need to get stronger in what they do.
Gary, you were talking about something that I thought was pretty important, and when this whole idea of H-Camp got involved, I'm super impressed at the number of people that have come into this that have been in sports as long as they have before this was a big issue, before this was a big concern. Here are guys like June Jones and others that are coming forward and saying, hey, you know what? I wish I'd known all of this back in the day. What can I do to help?
Now, June was at our Neuro Huddle when we sponsored.
I love that, by the way, Neuro Huddle. That's a great.
We sponsored that information that we had learned or brought as much as we could, and with the Cocoa of H Camp, we sponsored that at UH, and June was there, and all of the coaches to a one, you can tell they love the sport, they love the players, and they want to make it better. Had they known this, it would have been different. Had they known the hawk tackle technique, had they known what it's really doing to the brain if you're making the helmet, the battering ram, that's old school. We're new school, and we're going to save the sport, so it's very exciting. The helmet research that's going on at Virginia Tech and several universities, it's all moving in the right direction. We just need to get the blockage out of the pipeline, and that's the NFL. Mm-hmm. We want honest, full disclosure, and we'll be just fine with our sports.
You know, that being said, Ross, I know that what you are doing is all sports. We talked about the Wahine Judo. We talk about everything. But obviously, the big sport in our country is tackle football. I mean, that's where the money is. The endorsements are there. Look at you talk about your alma mater. Look at Marcus Mariota, and this kid's making $30 million in his first year playing the sport. That just shows you what, Attorney Gallagher was talking about last week, and that was there's so much money in this thing that they don't want to turn off the flow.
Right. Football, it does have a lot of money. There's a lot, it's exciting. ESPN, even some of the media was, when this first came out, the media was actually driving a lot of the education, and they were pushing for people to get educated about this.
I can remember when I was a small kid in the old Termite Palace, and Gary, I know you remember this too, stock car races. You didn't go to the stock car to see a good driver. You went to the stock car to see how many pieces of metal came flying off the cars. Same as the thing when you go to the Indianapolis 500. I don't care what anybody tells you. Most people are there for the possibility of mayhem. Isn't that kind of some of what mentality we have in some of the sports that we play?
Yeah, definitely, especially the way they have the games and what they do at the games to get people excited, hyped up about the hits, the music, the whole bit. It's to drive that excitement level way up.
I can tell you what the thing that I like the most, Gary, and this might come as a pleasant, you know, little ray of sunshine to some of our listeners. I love it in the NFL when they have the punt, pass, and kick competition, because that's not contact. You know, how far can you throw the ball, kick the ball, or, you know, catch the ball? And wouldn't that be, if we put our emphasis or appreciation level on that? In other words, we fans, we got to get trained too.
Oh, exactly. But I think we're at a really exciting juncture here, because it's like there got to be rules. You're not going to have somebody go 20 miles an hour, kick somebody in the groin. That's against the rule. This is a variation on that theme. It's ahead. Mm-hmm. The business model of the NFL has been Monday Night Football, boom.
Yeah.
We got to get them off that. Well, no. We can make it as exciting as we can.
Yeah.
But save the coconut. It can be exciting.
And we broadcast these things. We're just as guilty. Especially, I was watching, Ross, I know you're probably going to love this. Some of the graphic work that gets done and some of the animation that gets done, it shows two footballs violently hitting each other and this big boom and falling apart in a million pieces. That's the level of expectation some fans have.
It's right. Helmets, exactly. Not football. Helmets. That's their business model. Yeah. We're going to change that.
Yep. This is the robot banging in the beginning of the program. Yeah.
You know, and I still got to go back, though, because we were able to spend last week a lot of really quality time with Nathan Murata, and talking about the concussion part, the football part of it, is that I couldn't believe how much he said when he said that how much helmets really are going to cost, but yet what they're going to be worth. Are you guys seeing some of this stuff at the high school level?
The cost of helmets are pretty expensive. Yeah, they're in the $400 or $500 range.
Yikes!
And a lot of parents are going out and buying them for their child.
Thank heavens.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, $400 or $500, Gary, can give a soccer team the whole uniforms for the whole team. You know, pair of shorts, T-shirt for everybody.
But this is where the education is going to come in, Mike. It's not that you're protecting your kid with a helmet; you're making it worse. Mm-hmm. They're better off practicing without the helmet. The smart helmets I'm talking about aren't making your brain protected, because the helmet cannot. That's a consumer expectation that's false and fraudulent. The best practice, the safest practice for the coconut is no helmet. We got to get that out. The smart helmets I'm referring to have three-axis accelerometers. It's the rotational hits that cause the worst shearing of the brain matter that causes the really, really bad, devastating concussions and the breaking of blood vessels and all of these horrible things. We want the data set to where we can have an exciting game, takedowns, where it doesn't break the Richter scale. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of applying this science.
You know, Ross, I hear in Gary, and I know you do too, the passion of somebody that's getting parents and players and people that are past being helped. In other words, they need to be addressed for what injuries have happened to them. And I guess if this gets backwards through, in other words, it's going to be bottom up rather than top down. It doesn't look like the NFL is going to do anything. It looks like the level of expectation that a kid has coming in is who's going to protect me might be more important than how good of a helmet are my guys going to have that are going to help me.
Yeah, I think it starts from the bottom. I think for a lot of the kids, that's where they got to get educated. The parents got to get educated, because it's less than 1% that actually make it to the professional level.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot more kids that we need to protect. And then getting back to the helmet was designed not to protect the brain, but to protect the skull of the so you don't get a skull fracture. Mm-hmm. That's the primary purpose of the helmet. And it does give a false sense of security. So same thing like the soccer headgear. It gives a false sense of security that I have this on and now I'm going to be able to take headers.
But, you know, Gary, I can remember back in the day, my late grandfather a long time ago was a dental surgeon. And they love football season because, I mean, you know, kids would come filing into that office all day back in the one bar thing where, you know, that one bar didn't protect anything really. And now it looks like there's a cage in front of everybody. So they're not getting their teeth damaged, but but their confidence level in using that thing, like you said before, as a battering ram, is higher rather than lower.
Well, you know, it's all relative. Ross hit the nail on the head. The original purpose of the helmet, and if you look at the warning, which is really doesn't make sense, it's basically to stop a skull fracture, an immediate cause of death from that. Because when football first started at the turn of the century, the Ivy League schools were having deaths, you know, at Harvard and the high muckety mucks. You know, everybody, they're pounding each other's heads, so they put a helmet on them. Well, it was never meant to be a battering ram that's turned into Monday Night Football and exploding stars to make money.
You know, Ross, I got to laugh at this other thing, too. I know that because I got a lot of friends in the development and construction business that, you know, you go onto a project and a hard hat is there. It's not to hit your fellow workers with. It's in case a brick falls on you or something happens. So that's kind of what you were getting at earlier. The helmet was designed so you didn't get your skull fractured with a brick falling off the building.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's changed. And I think it's just a way that we have to change the thinking of how you use the helmet and to protect yourself. Yeah.
Gary, I saw a guy the other day at a few months ago at a construction project in Pasadena, and these helmets are so good that they have communications in them. When you're on a big high rise, you're talking to the guys in the helmets. And I know that's come into the NFL, but what you're talking about is not communication, but it's backwards information electronically being transferred from my hat to your iPad or whatever.
Exactly. There's helmet research being done at the Virginia Tech and some schools that are using that. And they've developed the technology is there. Mm-hmm. It's just for business reasons, the financial reasons, the NFL and the players union doesn't want to adopt it, or the whoever else is involved. I'm saying we want to adopt it for the health of our kids. As Ross said, 99% of the kids never going to make it to the high levels. But what, they're going to have brain injury for the rest of their life? I don't think so. Hawaii is too good for that. And with local style, Ross, them, these conferences and spreading the word, it's going to change. Hawaii is going to be a leader in this area, I promise you. They already are.
Okay,
we're just getting the word out.
That being said, Ross, I do know that there's always an issue on getting things funded, getting studies made, getting results, going uphill. Let's talk about the path is easy. Parents and kids want to be better off. But what about at the other end when a coach is hired or fired based on how many games he wins and how much danger he causes or how many people he gets the max out of to win that game?
Yeah, that becomes a tricky portion of it, how the coach motivates his athletes to win or to participate. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the cultural shift, that it's not so much it's educating the kids, number one, how to get stronger, how to protect themselves, how to learn the skills of the game, number one, to love the game first, and then they improve on their skills to do better in the sport. And then I think the wins and losses will come, but I think it's just the proper instruction from the very bottom.
I want to go back to, with you, Gary, the money bags part of it, and that is, you know, right now the NFL is probably pretty happy with the way things are. I mean, they're making a lot of money.
$10 billion a year.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awful lot of money, but in actual fact, you know, making those changes is probably going to be a little harder than looser. So what's the gap? What's the ideal goal? What's your goal? What do you think should be done with regards to some sort of a timeline?
I just think honesty. They just full disclosure of what the real research is. Don't hide it. And I, with respect to the win losses and the coaches would be just fine. Let's just have the same rules. Mm-hmm. But let's have rules that are intelligent rules. Let's not go fly in the dark with our coconut. Yeah. What's happening? Let's understand that. And we change the rules, tweak them here, tweak them there, to see what works. The number of concussions will come down.
Okay,
if we took helmets off 5 days a week and practiced the helmets, let's move in that direction.
Yeah, because if you get hurt with a helmet off, you're not likely to do that same maneuver again, right? But here's the other thing. They have probably claimed, Ross, and I know that this comes down specifically into college and then into high school football specifically, and that is they come up with a new rule in the NFL to protect the quarterback or something, or a chop block. These things that you used to be trained how to do, you're no longer allowed to do. And yet, I think they offer that up as the cure. It probably hasn't cured much.
Yeah, I mean, it takes time for any rule to change, and it's the coaching styles that need to change. And in some extent, you need that penalty to stop the behavior.
Yeah,
and I think part of that is where some of these rules have come in, and they need to make the change in the behavior. And it's partly everybody involved, the coaches, the referees, and all the eyes on the game need to change this.
Hey, Gary, we talked about this once off the air, and I think this is important. I can remember a couple of guys, you know, we all played pretty well in private and high school football. Everybody that went on to college, the first thing is somebody said, if you're a lineman, is you got to gain some weight, kid. You know, you're a little too little for that. And we've now we got these kids that are 6'7", 320 that are average line guys. Is what does that bring to the party as far as getting hurt? Because these guys are like getting hit by a mountain.
Well, that's it. If you've ever been out on the field at UH, it's scary. Yeah, it's boom. I mean, it's scary as hell when you're down there on the field. It's the same thing. It might change that, but I'm not really jumping ahead. I just want the data, the honest scientific data, to reveal itself. I mean, is it really going to hurt us? I'm not saying it is, but hypothetically, what if in 10 years players tended to get smaller? Mm-hmm. What, they're going to be healthier? I don't see that as a wrong move.
No, I think
if it's still exciting, and if you can't make Steven Spielberg and Star Wars special effects and NFL make it exciting, go find another job. Somebody will. Because people invest too much in sports. Everybody loves it too much. It'll still be a very, very exciting game.
Ross, with what's being done at your end, I do know that trying to sometimes move stuff uphill. And get to the end of the rainbow, if you will. And I can hear the passion with Gary Gallagher, and I know that you guys all have to have this. But what's at the end of the trail for your fruits and labor right now? As far as the observations you're making and the tweaking you're making to training, is it being received well, and is it getting up to where it needs to get?
I think when we look at our numbers of concussions over the years, I think we've kind of plateaued. On the numbers, so I think the awareness
which
is out
might
there.
Be good. That's
yeah,
good.
That's yeah. good.
Plateauing wouldn't be good for you, Gary, because you want them stopped. I mean, you don't want them just to plateau at 50 a year. You want them to go down to zero.
But you know what, if we had to cut the brain damage, catastrophic brain damage in 50%, would I take it? Sure.
Sure, step in the right direction.
No,
big
but
time.
Once everybody knows that and the parents know that, or I even think retired committee members that make the rules, that adopt the rules at the NFL, at the college level, and at high school, once they see what's happened to their own kids and grandkids, they're going to want it right. And those guys really know how to make the rules. Instead of having the guy that takes Jim McMahon, turn him upside down and slam him into the dirt, make that guy sit on the side for a year. He's not going to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. You know, Ross, I know that there would probably be some things that would really be rewarding and some things that would be really frustrating. So all we can do is I do on the radio, or what Gary does in his profession, and I'm sure you do in yours, is all you can do is make the highs higher. You know, you know, there's always going to be a percentage of people that are going to do the wrong thing and get hurt. But how important was it for you and others to be able to get guys like June Jones and others, even Chief Donahue and some of the others that are getting involved in this?
I think that the more people that we get involved with this, and I think the message that gets sent to the kids, especially if it's coming from a well-known coach or a well-known athlete, the message is a little bit stronger. And I think that's something that we need to use. And that's what we've done in our yearly presentations. We've brought in coaches, and they talk about their perspectives as an athlete when they played, and what would they do now, knowing the knowledge that they know now, and how they would have changed the game that they played.
You know, one thing that we learned, and I meant to ask this right away, Gary, in case it never did come up, is the sport of baseball, in some respects, came up with some pretty good stuff. I mean, they got the batting helmet with the thing on the ear, which is great, and they got a number of pitches at different levels of that a kid can't throw more than 80 pitches or whatever it is in high school. Is that sort of stuff on the horizon for a sport like football? In other words, limiting, if a kid's been hit 40 times, saying, hey, you're done for the day.
Yeah, there's rules as far as the number of minutes of hitting during the week. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that Hawaii is going towards, where we're going to limit the amount of minutes of hitting per week. And there are some states that adopted that already. And I think that's the next process that we need to get into.
Hey, Gary, what about this? I mean, when we're watching football, you see a guy get whaled, and he gets helped off, and they have to take a timeout because the player timeout, and then he's sitting on a bicycle a little while later. He's pumping up his legs again, and he's back in the game, and the crowd goes nuts. And that guy should have gone down to the locker room, take a shower, and go home.
Yeah, but when you see a Steve Young that goes down after how many concussions, and he knows himself how bad it is,
sure.
And you see that. When we just have honest disclosure of this, it's going to take care of itself, I promise you. Mm-hmm. We all want that old school my dad, he got his bell rung, or, you know, and get back in there. That's how it was. Well, we're dealing with the most delicate organ that ever blessed the planet, and we can't be kicking the thing around. And when you're drooling at age 35 or 40 and you're not 70, it's no joke. Once people appreciate that and they see their kid in that pipeline, they're going to want to make it a safer pipeline.
Yep. Yeah, and I guess maybe, Ross, you must be there must be a lot of other guys, your peers, the other trainers, that all have their ideas, whatever got them in, like got you into it.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that when you first started, it wasn't to deal with what you're dealing with today, that your eyes got wide open as a trainer to see how badly we hurt each other.
Yeah, I mean, when like I said, concussions have changed over the last 5-6 years, so it's a totally different ballgame. For me, my passion was more with knee injuries, mm-hmm. and preventing ACL injuries.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
And that was in the media 10 years ago.
Yeah, so you like the clipping rules. You get clipped, you clip a guy in his knee, you're out of the game.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, that's one aspect of it. But, again, it's getting your athlete stronger so that you're kind of preventing that same injury. And it's the same thing with the concussions. Is we're developing a prevention program to prevent the concussion from happening, whether it's an awareness of how to hit, awareness of the signs and symptoms, or the awareness of strength and conditioning to get yourself stronger for the game. I think it's all encompassing to keep you safe.
Gary, when you guys got together and your continuing involvement and continuing putting Gallagher Law resources into this area, obviously the light at the end of the tunnel is guys like Ross that really get it.
Oh, yeah. We just want to join forces them. You know, it's like everything we've ever done, whether it's asbestos, making a place safer for all of us consumers and workers, or whether it's tobacco, you know, the addiction that the company engineered into their product, a free-based nicotine. You figure all these things that we just want to make it safer. And it's the same policy reasons that I'm invested in this because, quite frankly, I think we can do more good on this one issue than we've done on anything else in my whole 36-year career.
How about putting on a different hat? Because obviously a lot of what you do when you're representing your clients that have been injured by faulty equipment, or in this case, maybe down the road a helmet, what about the medical profession being able to recognize and deal with not only what happened to a person, but what probably caused it?
I have a friend that's a neurosurgeon, and he said, Gary, what's going on? That guy that's getting there wobbling after he's been hit, his brain tissue has been sheared, and it's trying to rewire itself right there to find which way to get back.
Mm-hmm.
That doctor's with us. He doesn't want to, you know, ever see that again. And that's the doctors have been wonderful that I've dealt with, absolutely wonderful. But with respect to they don't have all the data, I'm a science kind of guy, and I want to generate more data. And Ross and Nathan guys are right in the middle of that. I just want to get in more funding and more focus in the preventative side, not after the fact.
I love the thing that you guys did, what Gary was talking about a while ago, Ross, and that's this neuro huddle. And I guess maybe that if parents become aware of the amount of attention that this whole subject is getting, they're more likely to be able to recognize things too. So what sort of information or sort of training is available for parents when they see a kid come home that has not told his coaches, that has hidden it because he didn't want to come out of the game? What can they look for at home?
Well, that's just not just at home, that mom and dad, it's also when they go to school and the teachers can pick up on it. And the signs and symptoms of a concussion, they may have a headache, they may be nauseated, they may be dizzy, they cannot recall as quickly. So there are several different signs, and a lot of the signs and symptoms are on our website, hcamp.hawaiiconcussion.com.
Or hawaiiconcussion.com.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Or the CDC also has this out there. But a lot of it can be picked up by the parents because they know the child the best. They know the behavioral changes. Same thing with teachers. A lot of teachers have identified concussions for us in the classroom, and they've told us the athlete trainer of the concussion. So the athlete wasn't reported at the time of the game or practice, but somebody else is picking up on it. And it's basically the whole community that's helping each other.
You know, Gary, from a law standpoint, and by the way, all of what we're doing can be checked out at GallagherLaw.com, especially some of this concussion stuff and some of the other fields of expertise and specialty things that Gary's office does. But I guess maybe the real thing of most interest to me here is that Ross is what's talking about is teachers are trained to look for signs of abuse, to look for signs of malnutrition. I mean, they get this as part of the thing. Do you see this being a mandatory condition or training program the teachers have got to go through to recognize these physical things?
I don't know about mandatory. I think it's just education. People are going to do the right thing. And as we, it's a gradual thing. And besides what Ross said, it so happens that the data or the science is showing that the peers, the friends of the player are the most accurate or the most likely to accurately report. Something's not right. Mm-hmm. And in long term, parents are going to know if their student was an A-plus student, and then now he can't concentrate. Now he's having a hard time in graduate school or in law school, medical school, but it was an outstanding player. Those pieces all fit.
Ross, you said one thing that's really cool, and I know a lot of quality coaches and trainers do this. If, you know, a kid starts getting looked at by college teams when he's in Pop Warner, and he gets, you know, and sooner or later the pros start looking at kid when he's in college. When you mentioned the small percentage of athletes that actually get to that pinnacle, is the incentive to make sure these kids know or these athletes know, look, you may get there, but if you don't, what you have to fall back on is this reading, writing, and arithmetic stuff. So maybe you got to have more of a balance.
Exactly, and we're seeing it more and more now that these NFL players are actually retiring. They're pulling themselves out of the game because of the potential that they see they may not be able to function.
Are they able to, as a trainer, can some of these players, you think, recognize that they've been hit one few too many times, and if they do some financial planning, they don't have to get hit anymore?
Yeah, I think that's the bottom line is this going to be my life, and what am I going to do after I'm 30?
Gary Gallagher and I knew John Wilbur very well and almost watched as the whole country watched Gary back in the day of Lyle Alzado at the Raiders camp from steroidal use. Everybody watched the deterioration of this guy. A lot of people would think that these athletes are starting to get that way because maybe they did something chemically. But what evidence is showing at your end of the deal is, no, they've just been hit too many times.
Oh, exactly. And it's all kinds of things. It's domestic violence. Mm-hmm. It's suicide. These things have been hooked up statistically. There's science that proves that. And it's so short-sighted for the NFL not to want to intelligently change the game so the guys aren't quitting. It can be changed. It can be made humane to where the risk is manageable. It won't, you know, just like anything, it's never going to be risk-free, but it can come back into the realm as opposed to consciously using players' brains for blood sport and then discarding them like just, I won't even say it on the air, nothing. And they don't want to pay him after. That's ridiculous. That's absurd. You know, let the owners that are billionaires do that to their own kids.
At what point are the unions, the players' unions in different sports, becoming valuable to this argument, or are they a problem to it?
Well, I think that they also need to be educated, and the more data we give them, the more they're going to be able to deal with. If they have players that come in, their job is to represent the players. I understand that. I get that. Maximize the number of years, and they know, especially if you're from a lower socioeconomic group, you're never going to have that opportunity again. But let's make it humane. Let's make it a reasonable risk rather than a blood sport played in the dark.
You know, Ross, You've worked with different young athletes at all ages, from small kids up to the ones that are going off to college and then some. What is the group that is most likely to consider alternatives? You know what I'm getting at? In other words, don't keep thinking you're going to go around on that merry-go-round and get that golden ring and your life is problem-free.
I think it varies in sport to sport. I think, and it also varies with socioeconomic. Some kids see this as their ticket out. So they're going to try and do everything to make it out, and they need to play every single game. They need to practice every single day. And again, it comes back to that, making that cultural shift, providing that education for the kids to see them that this is the potential, but this is also the potential of injury. So it is a lot more education on our part. But I think it starts from the very young, and I think number one, we teaching the kids that to love the game that they're playing in, and it's not that we're trying to stop them from playing the game, but we want them to play the game that they love safely. And I think it's as they get up into their early teens, I think it's the educating the parents of what happens with the sport and the potential for injury.
Yeah,
as well.
And that's finishing up today on a very high note. I want you to know that if you need to know more about Ross and the website, once again, people can go and take a look at what?
HawaiiConcussion.com.
HawaiiConcussion.com. And, of course, at GallagherLaw.com, that's even easier, too. So thank you so much, Ross, for coming down. And great job, Gary, getting Ross and all the other players to be able to open up to you and some of the concerns that you have about this stuff going forward.
Well, thank you. We're going to organize again, hopefully, our Neuro Huddle, the second one in January. But between now and then, Ross, when are you going to have another presentation like you had at McKinley High School last week?
I don't think we have one planned until probably the spring sports. Probably usually we do it in April and May. We have a in next summer, we're bringing in four national speakers to talk to our athlete trainers and physicians.
Isn't that the best time, summer in Hawaii, before the sports are going? Okay, that's going to wrap us up. Remember, you can find out more information anytime you like at GallagherLaw.com. That's GallagherLaw.com. Tell all your friends about us. We'll see you again next week.
Well, that's our program for today, and we certainly hope you'll come back next week for our next episode. In the meanwhile, to learn more about Team Gallagher, log on to GallagherLaw.com. That's GallagherLaw.com.